Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for March 6, 2022, at least for another minute. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we are talking AEW Revolution, which just ended on pay-per-view. We'll also be happy to talk anything about the Impact Wrestling pay-per-view that took place last night. It was Impact's Sacrifice event. The idea was to do another doubleheader here on Wrestling Night in America, but something tells me Revolution is going to be what a lot of people are going to be wanting to talk about here. So by all means, go ahead, call in 515-605-9345. Press 1 if you'd like to talk. Press nothing if you just want to hang on the line and listen. If it's too late for you to get in line, you can email us your thoughts, wnialivecast@gmail.com, and we will get to them as quickly as we can. Just to quickly run through the card here tonight for Revolution, 3 pre-show matches. Layla Hirsch defeated Chris Statlander. Hirsch will face Thunder Rosa this Wednesday night at Dynamite, which I will be there for live. Hook defeated QT Marshall, and House of Black defeated Pac Penta and Eric Redbeard. Match number 1 was Eddie Kingston over Chris Jericho via submission. Match number 2, Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus defeated Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly and the Young Bucks in a triple threat tag match for the tag titles. Wardlow defeated Ricky Starks, Will Hobbs, Orange Cassidy, Keith Lee, and Christian Cage in the Face of the Revolution ladder match. We had Shane Strickland debut and sign his contract. Jade Cargill defeated Ty Conti to retain the TBS title. CM Punk over MJF in a dog collar match where Wardlow turned on MJF and gave the AEW ring to Punk to use on MJF. Britt Baker defeated Thunder Rosa to retain the women's title. Jon Moxley defeated Bryan Danielson. William Regal debuted after the match, forced both men to shake hands. Darby Allin, Sammy Guevara, and Sting defeated Matt Hardy, Andrade, and Isaiah Cassidy. I'm sorry, I have that wrong. No, I don't. It's right. I'm delirious here late at night. And finally, in the main event, Hangman Adam Page retained the AEW Championship over Adam Cole. So, again, 515-605-9345 if you're joining us live and want to chat. You can also email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. We'll get right to the phones here because it's late and we want to make sure we don't let anybody hang on too long. Just a reminder, though, if you are calling in, keep your questions or comments to 3 so that we can get through everybody in a reasonable amount of time. So we'll go first to the 615 area code. It is Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. Good to hear from you.
Yes, Greg. It's always good to talk to you, man, on this late night. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, hanging in there. Long pay-per-view, but, you know, we'll manage. We always do.
No, we sure do. So, yeah, going into it, because I'm definitely curious. I hope Javier and Joel call in because, you know, them being there live, I'm curious to know their thoughts about the show and the crowd and all that kind of good stuff. But I would say a very good show, definitely a very good show. I would not say great show because there were things about it, you know, I didn't like, but overall, very, very good show. All the big matches, I think, definitely lived up to the billing. A few things I wanted to say I didn't like real quick were, well, first of all, when JR said in the ladder match that Keith Lee looked like a refrigerator with a head on it, that cracked me the heck up. That was hilarious. I was like, wow, okay, all right. No, the two things I didn't like were the ladder match. I didn't care for it. Orange Cassidy, I'm just kind of over his act now. I'm kind of tired of it. I'm tired of him just not caring about winning, not caring about just doing the stuff he does. And like you said, I think you tweeted how they just kind of, you know, Keith Lee and all of them did the spot, you know, on the ramp. It's like, guys, feel toward the ring where you're supposed to win. I mean, don't go way up there. I mean, just for a spot, it took me out of it a lot. I didn't like that. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I think that was – I didn't necessarily dislike the spot. I think the announcers tried to explain, you know, they were heading up to get the bigger ladder, which was atop the stage. Otherwise, certainly it would not have made sense for them to be wrestling further and further away from – where you can actually win the match. My complaint there was that was the point where they kind of lost me on the match, and it wasn't necessarily that spot up the ramp, but everything after that kind of, I don't know, went downhill for the match for me. It wasn't, like, terrible or anything, but I thought the first half of the match was significantly better than the last half of the match, starting, you know, at the point that they went up the ramp. The Orange Cassidy stuff, you know, he's very polarizing. I think AEW knows that. I'm on record. We talked last week when we previewed this show that I would have gone a different direction there. I would have had Anthony Bowens defeat him in the qualifier. But, you know, the Orange Cassidy stuff works when the announcers explain it as mind games, right? The kicks that he does, they're not supposed to hurt. It's not like he thinks you're hurt. He's hurting you. It's all mind games. So, you know, I can kind of explain that away and understand that. But like you said, when you're in a match and the guy shows very little interest in winning, that crosses the line from mind games to just not making any sense. So I do partially agree with you on that one.
Yeah, and then the last, you know, I will say they tried to make the spot safe, the you know, the tables on top of each other with the Sting and, you know, Darby and all that kind of stuff, but especially with Sting, like, I really don't want him doing that. I mean, it worked fine, but he did look still kind of woozy. I don't know if he was trying to sell it or what, but that was just a spot crazy stuff, just trying to get the crowd involved. Like, but it was way too much. I didn't care for that, any of that at all. I just thought it was – I'm glad – I hope Isaiah Cassidy, too, is okay, because that was really dangerous there on the stage. I wish they wouldn't do that kind of stuff. But anyway, the two main questions I guess I had for you were, going back to the main stuff, the Britt and Thunder Rosa match, I was really excited about it going in, and the match itself wasn't bad. Like, the work rate was good, but just – I know Britt's doing the heel thing with Rebel and Hayter and everything, but there was just way too much interference in the match. I thought it just kind of took me out of it. And with Britt winning, which I think they kind of had to, because I don't think they got the match as heated up as they probably could have. They tried to, but I don't think they did well enough. And with Britt winning, there's just not a lot of baby faces. I mean, they're going to have Rosa to try to get the spot back. But I feel like even if she beats Layla, which I'm assuming she will, it doesn't mean a lot. Do you think they're going to have Rosa win and try to win it back? Or who? What babyface do you think they have lined up for her next? And what did you think of the match in general?
The scuttlebutt on Twitter seems to be that Thunder Rosa is going to win the title on an episode of Dynamite in Texas later this month. And so with that in the back of your mind, I wasn't totally surprised that she didn't win here. Under normal circumstances, given how the feud has gone, I would have said, yeah, absolutely, I think Rosa really needs to win here. But, you know, kind of looking ahead and knowing that's coming down the pike, it made some sense that she lost here. You know, I may would have avoided doing this match so that she wouldn't have to lose before winning in Texas in her home state later this month, if in fact that is the plan. So I understood it from that point of view. The match itself, I thought, was probably one of the weaker points of this pay-per-view. And don't get me wrong, I thought this pay-per-view was, to steal a WWE word, stupendous. I thought this was a really strong pay-per-view. You know, my one complaint, again, is the time, especially on a Sunday night. You know, I can take a four-hour pay-per-view on a Saturday night when AEW does those, but on a Sunday it's very difficult. And that's not even counting the fact that I do an audio post-show of it. So, but I thought this was – so by saying it was the weak point on a great show, it was still a good match, but I think you're right, the interference – hurt this match more than it hurt some of the other matches that had interference. And, you know, if you want to add that to a list of complaints, certainly interference up and down the card was not terribly welcome. But yeah, I thought, and really, you know, actually, if you want to grade it on a bit of a curve, I thought it was better than maybe I thought it was going to be, just because the match that they had, I think it was on either Dynamite or Rampage this past week, it's all kind of running together, the tag match that they had where Rosa and Mercedes Martinez took on Britt Baker and the name escapes me. I think it was Jamie Hayter. That match was just an absolute mess, and I thought it was quite frankly not fit for national television. So with that being sort of the go-home push, there was a part of me that thought, you know, I wonder if that's going to carry over to the singles match here tonight. And it didn't. And so that was a feather in the cap of Rosa and Britt Baker. But, you know, taken together as a whole, I thought this show was really good. And Baker-Rosa was good, but I don't think it lived up to some of the other stuff that was on the card.
Yeah, I agree. And I wanted to say real fast, too, because I'm not going to really ask a question regarding it, but the CM Punk MJF was fantastic. They couldn't have done that any better. That was just awesome. And Moxley Danielson, the same thing. Just the physicality of those two matches were just, you know, the blood, I'm glad they left it to those two matches. I thought they would do more blood even than that. I'm glad they kept it to the two. But those two were fantastic, and the Regal thing is really intriguing to me. Wow. But going to the last match with Paige and Cole, I mean, great match. I don't think they haven't revved Adam Page up to where they should. And I don't think it's really Adam Page's fault. I think he's done well with the time they've given to him in his role, but knowing he's the champion, they should be putting everything into it. And I don't feel like they have, and some people are maybe blaming him, but I don't think it's really on him. But where do you think with Page winning, which I think was the right move because Cole hadn't built him up enough, I feel like, to win the title, and I don't think it would have meant as much. So Paige winning was good. Like, where do you think – who are some of the next challengers you think they're going to go with? Because I don't know if Miro's healthy enough to come back right away and have him challenge, or, you know, where do you think they're going to go with that? And then, Greg, like I said, hope everybody gets a chance to get in. Greg, you do, you know, great job, you know, on these late nights, man. I appreciate all you do, and I thank you for taking my call, man, as always.
Thank you, Sean. Really appreciate you calling in after the pay-per-views and giving your thoughts as well. You know, I think one name that you got to throw out there is CM Punk. I think after getting such a big victory over MJF, and I know Punk is a babyface and Paige is a babyface, and, you know, there were some boos for Paige at the end of that match tonight. And so he's a precarious babyface in some ways. And Punk is obviously one of the most popular figures on the AEW roster, so do you really want to tempt fans right now into booing Adam Page and cheering someone else when, you know, the possibility exists that he'll still be champion after Punk and you'll want him to be a strong babyface champion to face the next challenger? But, you know, with the way Punk won, I think that his name has to be in the conversation as a contender for the title. I do feel like Cole is going to perhaps move on to something else. You know, maybe if he gets another title shot, it'll be on TV. Wardlow is a name, although again, same problem. He's just turning babyface. You want to establish him as a babyface. Not sure you want to throw him in there with Adam Page. Moxley, depending on what direction they go with him and Danielson and William Regal, and, you know, maybe get an even harder edge and maybe even tease that heel, you know, now teaming up with Danielson and perhaps training a cadre of young guys could put Moxley in line for a title shot against Adam Page. That's a name that you got to consider as well. So those are just some names that jump out to me. Don Callis was on the pre-show doing a promo, teasing Kenny Omega. And so I know we're still quite a ways away from Omega returning, but we're also a ways away from the next AEW pay-per-view when they'll need another big title challenger. So when they pay off the Omega Page stuff and the return on that is something to keep an eye out for as well. All right. Again, this is Wrestling Night in America. If you're just tuning in, pwtorch.com, columnist Greg Parks here with you. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks, tweeting occasionally during the week during live shows, but certainly during major events like Sacrifice on Saturday night and tonight's episode of AEW Revolution. So we go back to the phones here, 410. This is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, thanks for staying up late for us here on Wrestling Night in America. What'd you think of Revolution, and what's on your mind?
Good evening. God bless you, Greg. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much.
Yes, I thought Revolution was a B-plus show, if I had to rate it. It had many highs and many lows. I mean, we went on an emotional roller coaster here tonight, I think. First of all, I wanted to discuss the tag team title triple threat match. To me, I thought that that was match of the night. I know many may have thought that the Punk MJF match was match of the night, but I really felt that this match showed athleticism, finesse, skill, and overcoming adversity. And I am so impressed with the development, the in-ring development of Jungle Boy. I mean, wasn't he spectacular tonight?
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I tweeted this out during the show. There are times when Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus as a tag team can look a half step below some of the other really top tag teams in AEW, like the Young Bucks, like FTR, like now Red Dragon. And I thought they really showed they belonged in that conversation with those teams tonight. Jungle Boy has really been, you know, consistently on that upward trajectory as an in-ring performer, gotten better and better. Luchasaurus, I think, is more hit or miss, and I think tonight he was really on, and he was a hit tonight. So I think it's a difficult battle for the match of the night honors, and I certainly can't fault you, Reverend Keith, for going with the triple threat tag title match.
Yes, and I was really impressed with Jungle Boy's superplex into the go-behind fall-away slam, which led to the finish. That was phenomenal. And some of the spots after spots after spots that all three of these teams were performing, as well as the bumps they were taking, was just impressive. Now, moving on, and I tweeted this tonight, I could not believe the fact that creative and the producers and the booking team would allow Ty Conti, with all due respect, to remain in the ring for 6 minutes with Jade on the role that Jade is on. No way I would have booked that match that way. That should have been 2 minutes or less, because Jade is on a roll. She's money. She looks like money. She's a star in the making. It's nowhere in the world. And if you notice, Jade's skill set is expanding. Did you see that homage to Eddie Guerrero with a frog splash? Yeah, she impressed me a great deal tonight. And you know, it's interesting that all the heel women won. But if you look at it, I'm beginning to wonder how long will Jade, in fact, be a heel? Because even though Jade pump kicked Anna Jay on the outside of the ring, which led to Anna Jay using the chair, it looked to me like both Ty and Anna Jay were wrestling more as heels than baby faces. What was your impression of that?
I can see how you can see that leading into the match. I think, you know, character-wise, there's probably a realization that Conti needed to amp up the physicality to be able to last as long as she did, even 6 minutes with Jade Cargill. And you know, I get your feelings about Cargill should have dispatched Conti with more ease, but we've seen that AEW doesn't really book that way very often. They tend to go on the side of the longer match, even when there's a pretty distinct mismatch in terms of where guys are and the levels. This goes back to Kenny Omega versus Allen Angels, when Twitter was in an uproar about him lasting so long against Kenny Omega, when they're clearly on two different levels in AEW, with Omega being the champion and Angels being sort of an undercard guy. And, you know, I think the same exists. Conti has actually been pushed a little more and has improved a lot. So I can understand why they would want to protect her a little by having her hang with Jade Cargill a little more. I would have expected to go a little shorter, not because Cargill should have dominated, but because you have two, and I think I mentioned this last week, you have two women who are not used to being the ring generals in there, not used to leading a match. You know, they're used to being led because of their relative inexperience to a lot of the other women on the roster. So you wondered how they were going to gel, and I thought they did a fine job for the time they were given, and Cargill looked impressive again, even though Conti lasted a little longer than maybe she should have.
Said Greg. Now, I question the placement of some of these matches. Now, all of us were on an emotional high coming off of the stellar MJF, CM Punk, Dog Collar and Chain match, which I think they did an excellent job trying to mimic and pay homage to the late, great Rowdy Roddy Piper and Greg the Hammer Valentine's stellar match in 1983. Mm. However, it didn't do Dr. Britt Baker nor Thunder Rosa any favors putting them after that match, placing them after that match. I felt that that six-man trios match, which had so many highs and lows, and it was action-packed. But that match should have been placed after the Punk MJF match, because if you notice, the fans were sitting on their hands and sitting on, you know, just quiet, like mice. Nobody really got into that match, and I just felt it was poor placement having the women's title match, which was one of the top four matches that were promoted prior to Revolution, to be placed in the death spot. What was your thought on it? Mm-hmm.
I think this was a very difficult show to lay out, just because there were so many matches that were high intensity and featured a lot of big spots. And Thunder Rosa versus Dr. Britt Baker was one of those matches that didn't have a lot of those spots. And I think you did need to give the crowd something to come down from off of the emotional match that was expected with MJF and CM Punk. And I think if you had placed the six-man tornado match right after it with all the big spots that that match featured, I think it would have kind of been overload for the crowd, where, you know, they needed something to come down with, and I don't think that match would have brought them down. It would have required them to be up even more, and the last thing you want is to do those kinds of spots to a dead crowd. You know, you don't want Sting jumping through two tables to a dead crowd because they're just so emotionally exhausted from the previous match. And the other thing you got to remember is, you know, with WWE's pay-per-views, they have those buffer video packages in between matches that almost serve as the come down. So you don't really need necessarily a come down match after a highly emotional match there. But with the way that this AEW pay-per-view is jam-packed, the video packages were very short, and they didn't serve that same purpose that they do for WWE pay-per-views. So it made it even more important to have matches like Baker versus Rosa, which, while a good match, did not have the high drama, did not have the high spots that some of the other matches did. And you can allow the fans to come down after that emotional high that MJF versus Punk provided.
Well, I felt that Baker and Thunder Rosa deserved a better spot, simply because, once again, it was one of the top four matches that were promoted, and it was for a title. Sure, I love Sting leaping high in the air at the age of 62. He encourages me, and I love Sting. I was there for his first title match, his first title win in 1990. He hit the Baltimore Arena. But at the same token, when you are highly promoting a women's title match, okay, why would you place that after one of your biggest matches of the night that everyone was waiting to see, the culmination of a two-year feud with Wardlow and MJF, and a six-month feud with Punk and MJF? I just felt like they could have placed another match, you know, like maybe rearranged the card in general, you know, to have another match go behind Punk and MJF, even if they had switched the two women's matches around, because people wasn't as into Jade and Ty as they were Britt and Thunder. So that's my point. They could have switched the two women's titles around or whatever way, but it didn't do the women any justice, I felt.
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at the card again, I think the best solution to that would have been, you know, you had Wardlow and in the Face of the Revolution ladder match, you had the Shane Strickland contract signing. If you'd have gone into Baker versus Rosa from there, and then Punk versus MJF and come down with Cargill versus Conti, I can see that. I think you're right. I think that might have been a better placement and given the AEW women's title a little bit more crowd interest or a little more opportunity for the crowd to be into it.
Yes, and I actually see where they're going now, and you alluded to it earlier, because Sean Ross Sapp from Fightful was the first to tweet that they were going to have the rematch in 2 weeks, which makes sense. It's in Thunder Rosa's hometown of San Antonio, Texas, and also the home of her solely owned Mission Pro Wrestling. She should get the title there, and then hopefully that match will main event that episode of Dynamite. And also it's important to note that that'll be the one-year anniversary of the St. Patrick's Day Lights Out match that they had last year, which was the one.
Yeah, perfect timing for that then. Absolutely.
Yes. One last point. You've heard me say many a times, and all of the PW Torch family would hear me on some of the call-in shows, state that I don't see too much in Adam Page's title reign. It's just something about him that just doesn't click with me. Now, I knew he was going to retain tonight. And also, on that note, I think this is the first AEW pay-per-view where there wasn't at least one title change. I'm going to research that, but I'm almost certain I'm correct on that. There were no title changes tonight. But Adam Page, he needs something. I mean, hopefully when Kenny Omega comes back, he'll renew his feud with Page, because I think it was better when he was chasing Omega. Ever since he's won the title, other than his matches with Bryan Danielson, to me, they just haven't registered like some of these other matches, like your Jericho Kingstons, your Punk's MJFs. Even Wardlow seems to get a bigger pop. Is there something about Page as champion just does not signify main event level status? When you're champion, his match is being promoted third on the card, because if you look at it, MJF, Punk, Britt, Rosa, and some could even argue Kingston, Jericho were promoted more than Page, Cole. Am I right?
I think they're more even than anything else. I think Paige Cole would have trumped Jericho Kingston.
Okay. I accept that. But my whole point here in closing is that in order for Paige to really sell as a champion, he needs to be in a feud with a true ring general. You know, if he was in WWE, they would have taken the title off him a long time ago. You see what I'm saying? That's why Big E is no longer champion. That's why Drew didn't get the title for the third time. Not yet, anyway. He may get it on SmackDown. But the bottom line is, in WWE, when you're a champion and the fans go 50-50 on you, they tend to take the title from you right away. Whereas in AEW, they give you these long reigns, whether you're over or not. So I'm not signaling his title reign as being a loss, because I think it's still some hope here. But hopefully when Omega returns, or like you said earlier with Sean, if Punk challenges him, that will ignite a spark in his title reign, and that's what he needs, someone like a CM Punk to challenge him, who can, you know, take over on the promos and also help elevate him. That's where I was going. Paige needs somebody to help elevate him in his title reign. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. He had a really good match with Adam Cole, and I think, you know, part of it too is the quality of AEW up and down the card tends to, you know, unfortunately not allow Adam Page's really good matches to shine above and beyond what they would if everything else on the rest of the card was just mediocre. You know, you're fighting for attention, even though he had a really good match with Adam Cole tonight, you're fighting for attention with MJF versus Punk. You're fighting for attention with Jericho versus Kingston. You're fighting for attention with the triple threat tag title match. And, you know, those are all matches that feature a lot stronger personalities than what Adam Cole is, or what Adam Page is. You know, Page is kind of an understated personality, good for a babyface, good for a babyface champion, really, in almost any other promotion in any other era. But in AEW, with so many other stronger personalities that just sort of demand more attention from the audience, you have a world champion that has a tendency to get lost in the shuffle. And I think that's the problem with Paige more so than, you know, the booking of his title reign, which, you know, that's a whole other story, or the quality of his matches, which to me are not a problem. But again, in a promotion where everybody's match quality is really good, his matches don't stand out like they would elsewhere, and his personality doesn't stand out like it maybe would elsewhere. So, you know, a lot of things working against Adam Page's champion, unfortunately, and I don't know how much of it is really Page's fault or AEW's fault necessarily, just the fact that AEW is so strong in some of those other areas.
I agree. Thank you so much for taking my call. Thank you for doing the oldest work. I know you're a hard worker, man, and I'll talk to you again on next Sunday.
All right. Thank you, Reverend Keith. Appreciate hearing from you each and every week. And we are here each and every week. 8 p.m. Eastern is our usual time slot on pwtorchdailycast.com on Sunday nights. Of course, if there's a Saturday night pay-per-view from one of the big couple of promotions, whether it's Impact, WWE, or AEW, we go on the air Saturday night after those shows, getting your reaction just as we are here tonight. And we've got a live correspondent that I'd like to go to right now. This is Javier Machado, pwtorch.com contributor, was there live in Orlando for AEW Revolution, and we always like to hear from live correspondents. Javier, do you have me here?
Hey, Greg, how's it going?
It's going well, Javier. I don't know if you heard me earlier.
How does that sound? Because I'm on car speaker, so I don't know if I'm sounding okay.
No, you're good. I got you loud and clear. I don't know if you heard earlier in the show, but I thought this is a really great event, even as long as it was, and that the length, of course, is one of the few downsides of a show like this. But from your live perspective, you know, what did you think of the show overall, and did it manage to hold the crowd's attention for the full 4 hours of the pay-per-view, 5 hours if you count the pre-show?
Attention, yes. Excitement, not as much, because people were pretty much spent really around the time that the CM Punk match happened. People were, like, you know, watching with rapt attention, but it wasn't until, you know, the Wardlow thing. So it pretty much after that you would have, like, you know, moments of, like, you know, people just losing their minds, like when Wardlow did his thing and when Regal came out. I mean, when Regal came out, like, my ears were hurting with the reaction that Regal got, yeah, when he came out. Because, I mean, it was one of those where, like, it started building up on itself because he wasn't, you know, as he was walking down the thing, people were like, hey, you know, and then you could hear, like, that groundswell. And that was awesome. That was one of the loudest pops of the night. But, yeah, I mean,
yeah,
so
go ahead.
And so for the most part, a lot of it was like that, where people were, you know, it wasn't like people were checking their phones or anything. But, you know, it was people, it almost felt like a Japanese crowd where they watch politely and then just pop for the big spots. That's kind of like what it started feeling like after a while.
And there were certainly a lot of big spots, absolutely, up and down the card. So This was, I think, supposed to be a sold-out crowd. Was there? Did it seem like that to you in the arena?
Yeah. For the most part, directly across from me where the hard camera is, there were some empty seats in that area, you know, because the balloons are already tarped off. So I don't know if those were seats that were added in late or what have you. When I was getting my seats, because there weren't any closer seats, I was like, well, I'd rather they play to me, and there were no seats available in that area. So I don't know if that was stuff that seats that are set aside for other people or what have you. Outside of that, it was pretty much packed. So.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, and somebody I did overhear somebody mention. I did overhear someone who, because I think they had Dynamite here, right? Somebody mentioned, there's definitely a lot more people here than there were for Dynamite.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. The end of the show is something I want to ask you about, because as the main event was going through its finishing sequence, it seemed like the crowd, for whatever reason, had turned a little bit on Adam Page and were booing, the knee to the back of the head, the buckshot lariat that he hit that set that up. And maybe they were never really firmly behind him, and that was kind of masked by the "Let's go, Adam" chants and, Adam's going to kill you and the fun that they had with two wrestlers with the same first name in the match. So maybe they were never really behind him from the start, but it certainly seemed by the end that there was some audible booing of Adam Page. So is that how it came across in the arena as well?
Yes, there was. By the way, I may have been responsible for one of the "Let's go, Adam sucks" chants. So if anyone's upset at that I contributed heavily to that one. At least in my section. But, I think the idea is because they were playing on what had happened to Hangman Page, where they tied him up, and it was basically a callback and the heel getting his just comeuppance. The problem is that since they're both very liked characters, it wasn't really like people were, Adam sucks and all the little, cute Adam, fight for Adam and all those other chants. Some of them they tried to start up and I don't think caught steam. I think it was mainly because you had two, I mean, they're not babyface in the way that they're booked, but they're two fan favorites. So I believe that since that was like the most heelish thing that was really done, I think people were like, what the hell? Because I don't think people were really paying attention to the fact that it was supposed to be a callback to the stuff that led to this point, which I think is kind of like a pretty much damning in the way that they, the setup to the match itself. I did catch the tail end of what Reverend Keith was saying, that this wasn't a very well-built match. It doesn't feel like it was, that there were two, a handful of other matches that looked like were more important than this one. And, so I think that the audience missed that beat. So, they were saying, we had a really good back-and-forth match, and here's this guy, cheating with this. And I think the knee wouldn't have been a problem had it not been for the fact that he had tied him up. So I think that sometimes it's better just like, the babyface, the babyface should have just stayed babyface and not turned to heelish tactics. Now, where did the show cut off?
They showed Paige sort of shaking Cole's hand after the match, and it may have stuck with it for another 10, 15 seconds, and I think it was out at that point.
Okay, so you didn't get a promo from Hangman?
No.
Okay, in the promo, he apologized to the fans because he recognized that people were booing him, and he apologized to the fans saying that he had to go to a really dark place in order to hold this title, and that he apologized to the fans, hope you can forgive me at some point. It was messed up because the people were cheering for him, but the moment he apologized, people started booing him. So maybe there is something to this.
Weakness. Apologies are weakness.
Yes. So maybe there's something to this whole don't apologize thing. But he apologized to the crowd for, going to a dark place. He explained that, for this, you know, that holding on the title is harder than anything he's, you know, that he's ever done. It's the most important thing in his life, I'm assuming, other than his kid. And then he said, you know, he basically called out anybody, you know, named a bunch of the wrestlers that are the more likely people to go up against him. He not name dropped Punk, Moxley, Danielson, you know, pretty much the Jericho, I think, the main group.
Yeah, and speaking of something Reverend Keith talked about, one of the other things he mentioned was his distaste for the placement of Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa after an emotionally draining Punk versus MJF match. Did you sense that the crowd wasn't properly amped for Baker and Rosa, and did you question the placement of that that women's title match? I mean, it was a big match that has been much hyped. A lot of people looking forward to this one. Did you question the placement after such an emotionally draining match for the fans, such as MJF versus CM Punk?
I think with tonight, after that first match with Eddie Kingston, because I don't know how it came across on TV, but that was the most sustained the crowd was all night pulling for Kingston. I actually DM'd Wade because when Kingston won, the actual arena was shaking because people were jumping up and down in unison. So I after that, everything, you know, a lot of the matches, you know, and then right after that, you had the tag team match, which was, you know, more oohs and ahs. Anything that would have come in too late would have been, because, I mean, that's one match, the MJF CM Punk match. I have to go back and watch because it didn't really get me at all from where I was sitting, because you really needed to really see the reactions because it was a story more. It's less move-heavy and more story-heavy, so I needed to, you know, see, like, how the wrestlers in the ring were reacting from where I was, and unfortunately the lighting was, like, basically wrapped around the scoreboard thing where they have the video blank, and you couldn't see the close-ups. You couldn't see what, you know, we couldn't see what you were saying. We only had the ring to go by. So that was one match that for me, was, I'm like, I got to go back and watch this. Plus, I think commentary would also have helped a lot, because of the story that they were telling. So, you know, and I was like, you know, because watching the match for the most part, it was another match that for the most part was kind of like more, again, it wasn't like people were not interested in it. They were just, you know, watching, you know, with rapt attention, just not really, you know, just oohing and ahhing on certain, you know, spots and hits, you know, but not really, you know, going nuts for anything until Wardlow showed up and, you know, was the culmination of that story. And then the crowd went banana. So, when that happens. Honestly, maybe you could have put the TBS title in that spot instead of the
yeah, that's what we talked about.
But it would not have made a difference because, I mean, when the TBS title was also kind of in the same boat. That one I felt bad because everybody's entrance got a standing cheer as the wrestlers were coming in, except for Tay Conti, which was, you know, kind of disappointing. I think it was more because the crowd was kind of, I don't think it was any indictment of her. I think that the crowd was exhausted. The lights went off because, like, her intro starts with her, like, you know, kneeling down with the flag over her, and then she starts off, you know, so it starts off dark. So when it went dark, everybody, like, you know, oh, what's going on? And then it's like, oh, it's Tay Conti. And then everybody sat back down. So I kind of felt bad. But I think that's also because, you know, the crowd was exhausted. We knew that we still had a long way to go at that point. And, you know, and you kind of knew it was the easiest one to predict what the outcome was of the whole night. So.
Yeah. All right. We actually have another correspondent here on the line, pwtorch.com contributor Joel Donnell. So, and I'll ask him some other questions, but is there anything that happened off camera or, you know, while there's a video package going on that you think is worth bringing up here?
Nothing really. I mean, cool. And then Tony Khan came out at the end and thanked everybody. Outside of that, there was not. I don't remember anything else happening that doesn't look like would have fit the show, except that promo that Adam Page cut at the end.
It sounded like, and last question, and I'll let you go. It sounded like, based on social media, there was a little bit of trouble getting people into the arena in time. What was your experience getting into the building?
Well, I drove up from Miami, so I have to make enough time. I made sure I was here like at 4, so I was like, you know, there. You know, I was one of the first people in, so I didn't really have that issue. So I was already in my seat and already gotten food by the time that they were just starting the what was the first match? The Layla Hirsch Statlander match. They were just starting that, but I mean, they pretty much started that match. At what time? At what time did it start? The pre-show, because it was like there was not much time to really seat people down for the buy-in. So it's almost like they were aiming to have everybody, you know, like the buy-in was going to go on, you know, and wasn't like really part of the show. It was something they were going to be doing while people were sitting on the seats. Because, I mean, there was like no time. I mean, I was surprised, you know, at how fast. I'm like, damn, they're already starting. Did not give us, you know, like 30 minutes or an hour. It's like real quick after they opened the doors.
Interesting. Yeah, it sounded like, I think the buy-in started at 7, and I started seeing people tweeting about getting into the building after 6:30. So, like you said, there was not a lot of not a lot of time in between that and the start of the buy-in. So, Javier Machado, PWTorch.com contributor, really appreciate you calling in with a live perspective here tonight of AEW Revolution.
Yeah. No problem, man. Have a good one. Continue listening on. You're not going to keep me up for the 3-hour drive I've got to make? You're not going to keep me company?
Well, you can listen. I hope I'm not going to be on the air for another 3 hours personally, but you can listen for as long as I'm here. So.
Thanks for it. Talk to you later.
Absolutely. Thanks, Javier. And you can catch Javier. I have him on as a co-host here on Wrestling Night in America every once in a while. And I have the next person who we're going to go to, who is a live correspondent at the show, often as a co-host here on Wrestling Night in America. That would be Joel Dinell, PWTorch.com contributor. Joel, let me know if you hear me, and welcome to Wrestling Night in America, and just start by giving me some overall thoughts on the show from a live perspective.
Hey, Greg, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I got you. You sound good.
Excellent. Well, thanks for having me on. I've owed you a podcast for a while, so I'm glad that we could coordinate to make this happen here. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, definitely.
As I'm sure – I've just kind of jumped in, and I heard the last part of Javier talking about the show. And I mean, I'm assuming most people are saying that this was an unbelievable show. I mean, just everything worked for this crowd. I mean, sitting on the floor for this show. And so I was about fifth row from the ring, kind of on the side of the ramp there. And so that, you know, it's a different perspective when you're sitting on the floor, that you, a lot of the noise kind of goes down towards that way. So, but from where I was, I mean, people were, sure, there was lull kind of moments where people were, you know, kind of taking it easy. They weren't as into, some matches as the others, but at no point did I feel like they lost the crowd or the crowd died or, you know, this was kind of the popcorn match for people to get up and go. I mean, people were into this thing the whole time. And like I just said before, is that like everything just really seemed to work for this crowd, that there wasn't, it didn't seem that there was really any bad matches. You know, I mean, the only thing that would kind of stand out as not being a great match, you know, would be the Jay Cargill and Ty Conti. But I mean, this was evidence with this crowd that, you know, Jade is well on her way to becoming a star, even though she's not fully there in the ring yet. I mean, this was a huge reaction for her, and just huge reactions for everybody throughout the night, even when you thought people were about to crawl into bed.
Well, I'll try to ask you some different questions than I asked Javier, so I don't repeat myself too often. So one of the things I wanted to ask was about Wardlow and his reaction that he got. I mean, was he a babyface from the start in that ladder match, or was it really the big turn in the MJF Punk match that put him over the top?
No, he was definitely a babyface in that ladder match. You know, he was one of the biggest reactions, actually, of the competitors who were coming out there for that. And, you know, I think people were kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm not – they were kind of unsure about how this ladder match was going to go based upon the competitors who were in it, that it was more kind of the, you know, power-heavy guys with Powerhouse Hobbs and Wardlow and Keith Lee being in this match. And so people were kind of unsure about what to expect. But, you know, I mean, this was really based around obviously getting over Wardlow, and people were into him, you know, throughout the whole match. I think that, you know, at least me kind of watching the match partway through, I'm thinking, yeah, this seems like probably the night for Wardlow to do it, you know, given everything with MJF. And so, yeah, I would say that people were solidly behind him and they were ready for him. I was concerned with a lot of the booking that maybe they had waited too long to do this turn with Wardlow. But I think absolutely waiting until you're in front of the diehard, you know, AEW audience who comes in for these shows, I mean, this definitely worked for them, especially when we got to that moment in the MJF CM Punk match.
And speaking of that match, CM Punk came out with an homage to his Ring of Honor days, the music, his gear. Did you get a sense that the crowd understood those references, or were they unhappy that they didn't get to sing along to Cult of Personality and get the full CM Punk and AEW experience, or what was the reaction to that entrance like?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I mean, like, most of the people on the floor were kind of, like, unsure as to what was going on, you know, if CM Punk was going to have, like, a totally different entrance. I'm unfamiliar with the AFI song that he used in Ring of Honor, but the guy sitting next to me was head over heels about it, and he was telling everybody in the section, he's like, this is CM Punk's song from Ring of Honor. So I think that, you know, in the beginning parts of it, people were kind of, you know, what's happening with this. But as soon as Punk came out, I mean, they realized that this was a cool moment. And I think people were able to kind of connect the dots, especially with that they've seen, you know, CM Punk wear a lot of that similar attire when he was in Ring of Honor, even if they weren't as familiar with the song.
One of the things I'm really interested in doing in going to Dynamite, and it's going to be on my first AEW show this Wednesday night here in Fort Myers, is seeing the makeup of the crowd, because the last time I went to a WWE show in Fort Myers, almost everybody there was family with kids. And I know that it's going to be a little bit of a different AEW crowd. So what was the makeup of the crowd in terms of demographics? And did you get the sense that it was mostly a fly-in crowd, or were there a lot of people from the area there?
It was definitely, you know, a mix of both, where there was people. I mean, the person I was sitting next to, who was a big wrestling fan, I mean, he's from Orlando. And it seemed like there was quite a few people around me who were from at least Florida area. They may have driven, you know, like Javier driving from Miami. I heard somebody else coming from Tampa. But definitely, I mean, you hear different accents. There's people in front of me who actually, they flew from London to come to this show, a whole row of people. And so this definitely has kind of the same cast and crew that you see at the other AEW pay-per-view events, where you start to become familiar with a lot of the faces of people who just fly into a lot of these shows. So I think that, you know, there was a healthy mix of both people. But the other thing that was really interesting to me is that typically when I've gone to two other Dynamite shows, and those have been, you know, more of kind of the family mix where you'll see kids, and the pay-per-views have generally been kind of that that core audience, you know, the 20 to 45-year-old. And where I actually at this show, I saw a lot more kids here, you know, and I assume that there's probably some sort of connection, being that it's in Orlando, there's the theme park, so it's probably easier to bring kids, you know, if you're flying into this show, that you can kind of make it into a whole family event versus just being for wrestling. But on the floor, I mean, there was definitely quite a few kids, more than I've seen at any of the other pay-per-view events.
Interesting. Yeah. I want to ask you about the reaction to Shane Strickland. You know, Orlando, you know, he spent a lot of time there in NXT and in that area of Florida, you know, the middle of Florida, maybe more Tampa. But still, you know, that was his area for a little while anyway while he was in NXT. And, you know, with a lot of the crowd being fly-ins, although probably very knowledgeable, AEW fans tend to be a little more knowledgeable about the greater professional wrestling business than, you know, WWE fans. I think they tend to be more WWE focused. What was the reaction to Strickland? Did you get a sense that a lot of people knew who he was? You know, you heard the Swerve's House chant and things like that. So that had to be a pretty good sign that a lot of people knew him and knew of his work.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because when he first came out, when Tony Schiavone introduced him, I mean, a lot of people are kind of looking at each other like, who's this guy? Who is he? And I mean, these are people on the floor, you know, who are paying the most amount of money to be at these shows. We're kind of like not so familiar with him. But when he gave the Swerve's House line, I mean, that was like, everybody in the arena was doing that, you know, like at least a very vocal amount of people were following along with that line. But I did not get the sense that, you know, this was as, you know, well-known of a wrestler like you think of at their last event, you know, Full Gear in Minneapolis, when they announced that Jay Lethal, and he came out there and he got a great reaction from people. Obviously, he's got more of a name being in Ring of Honor. He's been around for a longer time. But, you know, as far as this signing, it just didn't seem like this was kind of the big monumental one, that there's going to be some work for AEW to do to introduce who, you know, Shane Strickland is to the crowd.
I'll ask you one of the same questions I asked Javier, and that was getting into the building. It seemed like for the start of the buy-in, there was very few people in the arena. It sounded like on social media that the arena staff did not really have things properly set up at the beginning to get as many people in as quickly as possible. So what was your experience getting into the building?
Yeah, so I was at the Dynamite event that they had at the same building in October, and, you know, I didn't face any of the same challenges. I mean, it was pretty, you know, easy to get into the building, not your typical pay-per-view event where there's a huge cluster of people before the doors open. But this time around, there was like a number of lines, and I tried to take some pictures and post them to Twitter, where there was like several lines in front of the building, and some of them were like wrapping around the block. But the thing is that all these lines were going into the same place, but you could find different areas in there where there was just much shorter lines to get in there. And so I just found like a short line. So it only took me about, geez, probably like 10 minutes from joining the line to get into the building. And this was, you know, shortly after the doors had opened. I mean, this was probably about 10 minutes after that. But there was other people who were just hanging out in lines that were just totally wrapped all the way down the road. So I think it's just kind of a matter of where you jumped in, you know, as far as just following the crowd and trying to get in there. But one of the biggest issues was, typically at the other AEW events, when they have their merch lines, they have like more of a structured queue, where it has guardrails in order to get in there. And there's a sequence of people who you know, as far as who's going to come up next. Whereas this was kind of more set up like just going to a concert where there was a mob of people around the merchandise. And so as soon as you went through the main doors of the arena, they had a huge merchandise area, and it was just a mad cluster of people. So as soon as people were getting their tickets scanned, they were just jumping right into the merchandise line. And I'm only aware of one other one that they had. I didn't walk around the whole arena, but they did have another merchandise, the same setup, just right upstairs, where it was the same kind of cluster. And so, I mean, definitely, I know that they've ended up having really long queues in the past, which I've kind of bled into just kind of going around the whole arena. But it seems to me, after experimenting with just having the mob of people, that it's much better to have the line, because, you know, it leads to delays as far as people getting in. You know, people just end up in line for, or just in the mob forever to get merchandise.
Sure. Joel, before we let you go, anything else that you saw tonight that you wanted to mention that we may not have caught on TV, or just a reaction to something, or anything else you want to mention before we let you go?
Yeah, so I heard you also asking Javier about Hangman Page, and you know there's people just kind of having fun with you know, just doing the Adam chants because they're both named Adam, but I think that I don't know how much of it was on TV or if there'll be clips online, but he did do the promo afterwards, and it was a very small amount of people who were actually booing Hangman Page at the end of it. Sure, he did some heelish things during the match, but afterwards, I mean, like, it was very hard to hear the promo because there was about, like, just three or four guys who were booing him, like, very loudly. And so, I mean, most people were behind Hangman Page, and it seemed to me that it was really just, like, a few kind of pockets of people who seemed to be booing him.
Interesting. Okay, yeah, that's good for clarification purposes. I'm glad you brought that up. Joel Dinell, PWTorch.com contributor. You'll often hear him as a co-host here on Wrestling Night in America. Joel, thanks for sharing your live experience with us here on Wrestling Night in America.
Pleasure, Greg. Thanks so much, man.
Absolutely. Thank you. Let's get to a couple emails here. We have wnialivecast@gmail.com as we hit the 1 a.m. hour on the East Coast. If it's too late for you to stay up and ask your question via the phones, you can always email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Corbin asks, do you think a big reason why Eric Redbeard signed is to be close to negative one? I'm not sure what his relationship is with negative one, his former tag team partner's son. Obviously, we saw on the Brody Lee tribute show that AEW put on, Eric Redbeard made an appearance there. So, you know, I think I don't see AEW hiring him for that reason. And I think, you know, some have made the argument that, you know, Eric Redbeard may be one WWE, a former WWE wrestler too many, that he doesn't necessarily fit in with what AEW is doing or even with the group that he's a part of. But, you know, I think there's something to, you know, him being close to Brody's family and, you know, Amanda, Brody's wife, working with AEW in their community outreach, and Negative One being at some of the shows, you know, that could be nice for him, cathartic for him to be able to see them as often as he would being a part of the AEW roster. All right, let's go back to the phones. The 419 area code. This is Craig from Toledo. Craig, thanks for hanging up late with us here on Wrestling Night in America.
I haven't hung up yet.
Well, I appreciate that.
I am going to speak very slowly, Greg, because I know you want to stay up as late as possible.
It's my dream. It's my dream.
Tonight was wild, dude. Like, I haven't stayed up for a pay-per-view, like, the whole way through for a while. It was phenomenal. And I usually totally agree with Reverend Keith, but I totally disagree with what his take on the card placement. Like, every match on the card needed to be where it was. And it kept everything moving. It kept, you know, it was just like a thrill ride the whole way through. It was like one thing after another. I loved it. But of course, we don't call into these shows to talk about what was great. We call in to talk about what we think sucked.
You're more than welcome to talk about everything that was great when you call into these shows. Don't feel obligated to criticize when you call in, Craig.
The entire show, I mean, this is the best show I've seen on television. That's just me, though. But there were a couple flaws, and the flaws were in the main title pictures. Like, I think Thunder Rosa should have won, and I think that Joel was just called saying that Adam Page got booze and it was in a pocket. We heard that. I was like, damn, he's getting booed? You heard that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It was weird. I'm like, why is he getting booed?
Yeah,
I mean, I can see what
Javier brought up with in terms of, like, because I really noticed it when he tied Adam Cole's wrist to the top rope. That's when I heard the booing start. And I can understand that. That's kind of a heelish thing to do. And so I thought it was interesting, and I'm not sure if this was something that, you know, Paige took upon himself to do, that promo that we didn't hear off TV where he sort of apologized for that. But I think if it was something that he did on his own, I think it was really quick thinking and really smart of him to do that. And, you know, it's a reasonable explanation for what he did for those who are concerned that he was acting heelish and were booing him for it. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if this, you know, if this kind of carries over to any TV in the coming weeks.
But I don't think that's why he got booed. I think he got booed because that was the main event of an amazing card, and he's the champion. I think everything else was so great on that card. Everything. I mean, go on Twitter and just see how people are talking. Everybody was, like, crazy about everything that happened during the entire event. And then Adam Henning Page closes the show winning a match, and everybody was like, meh. I think...
Do you think they really booed him for that, though? Like, it was a really good match, and it seemed like the crowd was into it, even if they were, you know, chanting for Adam most of the time. But, you know, and he's not had a reception like this anywhere else, so I would think that at the end of a really good show, to have a really good match cap things off, and I don't think anyone really went into this expecting Adam Cole to win, especially, you know, the pretty discerning AEW fan base that attends these shows, so I would be surprised if that was the reason.
Yeah, I just don't know. It, for me, I don't boo wrestlers, like, I don't cheer or boo, I just sit and watch. But in my mind, when I'm watching that match, I'm like, I could have used Moxley, Danielson, or Thunder Rosa and Britt as the, you know, as the main event. It just seemed like a, like, after Regal came out, I put some pizza in the oven and just sat down and watched the rest. I wasn't as invested. I don't want to make it sound like.
But again, is that Adam Page's fault enough to get booed by the crowd? That's what I have a hard time connecting.
No. And that's what I was saying. I would never boo him. But I wasn't as invested because I kind of knew what was going to happen. I knew he wasn't going to lose. And it was the same thing with the six-man. I guess, I don't know. When I watch a show like that, $50 is a lot of money for me. You know? That's like,
a lot of money for most people.
Yeah. But they did a great job, but I'm like, yeah, I didn't drop my 50 for Hangman. I dropped it for Eddie Kingston and Thunder Rosa. And I mean, everything delivered tonight. And it was great. It was a great show, but that it was kind of like a duck fart, you know?
yeah, I guess And I think this goes back to my point that I made at the end of Reverend Keith's call in terms of, I think Adam Page in a lot of eras would be a really good champion, but in this era of AEW where his personality just doesn't stand out the way a lot of others on this card do, and his matches are really good, but you're in an era where all the matches on the AEW pay-per-view card are really good, so he can't stand out that way. I think there might be soon, if not starting tonight, a little bit of pushback on his championship reign because he's not that overpowering personality that so many of the others on the AEW roster are. So that could play a part in it.
And I really hope that he gets a, you know, I really hope he gets a good push because, you know, when I was a kid and I watched wrestling, I was like, being the champion is the ultimate thing. You need to be the champion. And if you're not the champion, like I was so pissed when Bret Hart lost to Yokozuna and then Hogan won. And I was like, this sucks. I love Bret. But, but the Diesel thing, like everyone saying Diesel was a bad champion. And I'm like, I freaking love Diesel, but it's about the push behind you and the, I'm starting to babble. So I'm going to cut myself off.
Well, it's also, you know, I'm sure when Diesel was champion, you were young and you know, certainly I was. And so I didn't understand the backstage machinations behind it. I didn't understand, you know, his inability to draw as champion or anything like that I learned about later. You just saw this huge guy getting pushed as a big deal, and you thought, wow, this guy is cool. And later you learn, oh, you know, he didn't have the top matches. He did not have a lot of good opponents to work with. But when you're, you know, 10, 11 years old, that's not on your radar.
Right. And I just hope with Hangman, because I like him as a person, like him being barefoot and just welcoming people into the hotel when they were in All In. Like, I like him, and I want him to be a representative of the company, but this championship run was kind of lackluster, or is kind of lackluster since he's still the champion. But
yeah,
I just hope something happens. And all the interference, that to me, and I'm sorry to keep going, but the interference in the women's title match with Thunder Rosa and with in the Hangman match, like, they kind of booked themselves out of a clean finish, and I didn't like that because the card was great, but those matches should have had the clean finish. And I'll hang up and let you go and get to bed and hope you have a great school day.
All right. Thank you, Craig. Yeah, I agree with you on the interference. I think it's more of, you know, if we're looking ahead again, talking about Thunder Rosa winning the title, perhaps on an episode of Dynamite from her home state of Texas later on this month, then you certainly don't want to put Dr. Britt Baker over her clean. Now, if you were going to move on from Thunder Rosa and have Britt Baker face someone else, then maybe you'd put her over cleanly. But again, you want to have Rosa, and she'll probably defeat Layla Hirsch this Wednesday in Dynamite, but you want to have Rosa not necessarily have an excuse, but have something to where she can say, well, you only beat me because of this, so I really deserve this other opportunity at you. And I think that's kind of what they were going for there. Another email question. This is from Claude in New York. He says, having John Moxley bleed just a few matches after CM Punk is just too much on one show. Is AEW using the blood spot too much in your opinion? Thanks. I think the fact that they only had it in two matches tonight was AEW's version of cutting back on the blood. And these are two matches that you really needed it on this show, because, you know, you couldn't do the dog collar match. You couldn't do that match justice without blood. You couldn't do the real blood feud that has developed between CM Punk and MJF without blood. And the whole story of Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley was Moxley said he doesn't team with anyone that he doesn't bleed with first. And so, you know, on that basis, you had to have some blood in that match. So I think you could have told that story better than without blood. You could have come up with another reason that Moxley accepted the one-on-one match, or Danielson accepted it, rather. So in hindsight, you know, you could have done something where that wasn't the main crux of this match. But I think in general, I think they do blood a little too often for my liking. You know, I'm not someone who's going to stand on the rooftop and shout that we need more blood in wrestling. I'm not one of those people who thought WWE was silly for getting rid of blood. I totally understand that point of view. And 95% of the time, I think WWE is right to not have blood. It's just those 5% of matches where, man, that blood could add a little to that match, or, you know, something to that effect. And AEW certainly uses it more than 5% of the time. So I think they would be better to cut back, especially on TV. You know, if they saved it for pay-per-view, saved it for something special, I think that would be the better course of action for AEW, just to, again, make it feel a little more special. So we've passed the 1 a.m. mark on the East Coast. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. Give me a follow. Interact with me as I tweet out during the big shows in pro wrestling, which is what we talk about here on Wrestling Night in America each and every Sunday night, usually at 8 p.m. Eastern. That'll be the time slot we're in next Sunday night, where we start turning our focus toward WrestleMania. And again, if you happen to want to talk about Sacrifice, that was on Saturday night too. My plan was to talk about both of those shows tonight. I didn't really get around to Sacrifice. The pre-show match was Rich Swann and Willie Mack over Mike Bennett and Matt Taven. Also, Lady Frost over Giselle Shaw. Match number one for the main show was Trey Miguel defeating Jake Something to retain the X Division title. We now know that Jake Something's contract has expired with Impact Wrestling. Eddie Edwards over Rhino in match number two. The Influence defeated The Inspiration to win the Knockouts tag titles. Jonah defeated PCO. Jay White over Alex Shelley. Deonna Purrazzo defeated Chelsea Green to retain the ROH women's title. Tasha Steelz defeated Mickie James to win the Knockouts title. Violent by Design defeated Anderson and Gallows to win the tag titles, and Moose defeated Heath to retain the Impact title, and Josh Alexander made his return in the post-match. So that is what happened on Sacrifice. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send emails not only for tonight, but also anytime during the week. You know, we talk about the big shows in pro wrestling, so if you're watching Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW, all the shows that we talk about each week here on Wrestling Night in America, shoot us an email, and we'll talk about it on the show, answer your question, give you our thoughts on your topic of choice. So we go back to the phones. Our final phone call this evening, it looks like, is the 407 area code, 407. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Greg. This is Lindsay from Orlando.
Lindsay from Orlando. Did you just happen to be at the Revolution pay-per-view as well?
It just so happened I was, yes.
Excellent. I'm glad we get a third correspondent live. I think that's that sets the record here for Wrestling Night in America. But I'll ask you, starting off, the same question I asked Javier and Joel, is what were your overall impressions of the show first?
Overall impressions, very well done. I think the disappointment was that there were no title changes. And that was going to be my question to you, was were you surprised that there were absolutely no title changes? My buddy and I went in thinking that, if anything, it was going to be the tag titles, that Red Dragon was going to get it, you know, and that was going to be your proverbial, you know, there has to be a title change, of, you know, like one of these things, and it didn't happen. So I was just kind of curious as to your thoughts. They're going to save everything until, like, Double or Nothing Chicago type thing.
Yeah, I think that really was the only title that I could have made an argument for changing hands. You know, Adam Page, I didn't feel like his title was in jeopardy. Same with Britt Baker. Once you once you put two and two together and you find Thunder Rosa, you know, later on in the show, later on in the month is going to have Dynamite in her home state. That made more sense than winning here. Jade Cargill never felt like the TBS title was really in jeopardy there. So I think you're right. I think if it was one of the titles to change hands, it would have been the tag titles. You could have, you know, certainly the focus there was on the continued dissension between Red Dragon and the Young Bucks. And you could have easily had one of those teams win the tag titles to continue driving that wedge between those two teams. Or you could have had Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus win and, you know, have one of them cost the other the match or something like that. So you could have gone either way on that. They chose to keep the belts on Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus.
Sure. And so that was going to be my only question, and I did want to make a couple points now that I've heard everybody else. With regards to the Baker match, the women's title match is where it was placed. I'm going to have to agree with Reverend Keith. The crowd was absolutely dead. Granted that we had a lot of great matches prior to that, and that unfortunately ended up being the breathing point for the rest of the crowd.
Yeah.
And so so both Britt and Thunder Rosa probably could have benefited moving that match maybe closer to first or second in the lineup when the crowd was really revved up. So that's a comment on that one. With regards to the lines, there were long lines, and kind of like what Joel was saying, that there were lines that were wrapped around the building. You just had to kind of meander to find where the shorter lines were, but not a lot of people were doing that. So as a result, people were arriving a little too late. My team and I, we didn't get in there until Don Callis was starting. So this was news to me that there was a female match, that there was a women's match that started off. The whole thing. We completely missed it. And just wanted to make a comment with regards to Hangman and booing. So with regards to the Orlando crowd, you know, I've been here for almost 20 years now, so I consider myself a semi-native. But anybody that kind of has any sort of that, I mean, obviously we get a lot of wrestling here in Orlando, whether it be NXT or whether we get a lot of indie promotions that just kind of come and hang out. So any wrestler that passes through Orlando for any, whether it be multiple times, a lengthy stay, et cetera, they're the ones who are probably going to get cheered, even if they're the, even if they are the heel. So for like Adam Cole, he's kind of considered an adopted hometown guy. I mean, he lives here with Britt. You know, we watched him grow from, you know, a New Japan guy to a worldwide star in front of us, in front of, you know, in NXT. So those types of that talent, they're always going to be the ones getting cheered, even if it's not supposed to be the right way, you know, here in Orlando. So I don't think it had anything to do with Hangman and his intentions and his, you know, what he did. I just think it was a case of this is very much a pro Cole crowd, you know, and that was the same way with, Ty Conti. So, you know, and stuff like that.
Did you feel like that was consistent throughout the entire match? And again, I know that the crowd was happy to do their Adam stuff, but did you feel like it was consistent throughout the match where they were more pro-Cole than they were pro? They may not have been negative on Adam Page, but they were more pro-Cole than pro-Page.
I think it was. It definitely was not, as you say, it was not negative on either one of them. It probably started off 50-50, where you had the people that, you know, they were kind of doing the, you know, you're getting behind the hot person of the moment, which is Hangman. So you had those people that were going for the millennial cowboy shit and all that. But as far as the real diehards, you know, they were the ones going behind Cole. So it was 50-50, I would say, throughout the entire thing. And then finally near the end, then Cole was getting was drowning out Hangman.
Okay.
For what it's worth.
Yeah. I was curious too, to know, you know, you mentioned no titles changing hands. Was it just a crowd that, you know, by the end of the night with no titles changing hands that they just wanted. That's what WWE crowds pop for, right? They pop for those moments, those title changes. Even when heels win, they pop for it because it's a moment, it's a happening. And I was curious as to maybe that was part of the equation for some of the fans too, where they hadn't seen a title change all night. Maybe, you know, they could will Adam Cole with their cheering into a title win so they could see a title change by the end.
Yeah, possibly. I didn't hear too many grumblings about it. I think part of it was, okay, there was no title changes, but also during this match, there was a lot of people that kept looking at the entrance. They were waiting for Kenny Omega to come out. Everybody had their cameras just right there at the entrance near the end of the match because we had Don Callis. You know, we had Don Callis at the beginning. Kenny Omega is a local. He lives here in Orlando. You know, so I think there was a lot of expectation that he was going to come out, even though, obviously, you know, I don't think that he is 100% yet. I don't think that anybody came away with it upset that there was no title changes. I was just a little, I guess, surprised because there's only four pay-per-views that AEW does per year. And so you were kind of thinking, well, there might be one. Not a lot, but maybe just one. I don't think that it was a deflation because there was a lack of a title change. I think it was just a kind of a either you know, wait for the big Omega entrance or something. And it didn't happen.
Turning to the semi-main event, the Darby Allin, Sammy Guevara Sting versus Matt Hardy, Andrade, Isaiah Cassidy match, was that match live hard to keep up with because they were in all different parts of the arena? And by the sounds of it, the video board was not very helpful in trying to keep track of what was going on in that match.
Yeah, that's 100% correct. So first off, the only video package was on their little the center Titantron, if you want to call it, and that Titantron was completely surrounded by the lighting equipment. So you could not see anything off of this Titantron. They did not do any of the video screens associated with the stage, you know, that you would see at a Raw or a SmackDown. So as a result, you really were relying on the ring, as Joel was saying. And unfortunately, this was all over the place. The spot off of the stage, the Sammy Guevara spot with, you know, the private party people, that was completely opposite of the arena of where the Sting spot was. And both were going on at the same time. So you had, and for us, I mean, my seats, I was near the announce booth. So, of course, my viewpoint was very much on the stage. The only thing that we could see with regards to Sting was him actually jumping, but you never got to see the landing because that was way down deep in the concourse area. So unless you were on the far opposite side of the arena near that concourse area, you absolutely could not see it. So that was the only unfortunate part, you know, about that match, because otherwise it was a stellar match. It was just there was something going on every second. So kudos to All Six Men on that one.
Do you have a match of the night? I know I said earlier in the show that it was kind of hard to, you know, there's a lot of contenders for match of the night, but being there live, was there a match that stood out to you above and beyond any of the other matches on the show in terms of quality?
I think the two that surprised everybody the most was the House of Black match and then the ladder match. Because I guess it was one – I hate to say that you go into ladder matches thinking, well, you've seen them all. You know, another ladder match. How create – you know, you have to get real creative with how you use these ladders, you know, nowadays. That was, I think that was a big surprise for everybody, and it really kind of revved people up. But the House of Black match, that was a big pop for everybody. But again, you had a lot of, you know, former Orlando people who were in that match.
Yeah.
So as a result, you know, the crowd was very much behind them, it was good energy, and you had, you know, four phenomenal workers, two big guys who actually did their job. So that was, to me, that was a huge surprise. I was very entertained by it.
Was it bigger pop, Regal's appearance or Wardlow turning on MJF?
Ooh. I would say, oh boy, that's a hard one. Because the thing is that when Regal came out, he kind of came out amongst the security. There was a bunch of security that kind of got waved to the ring, you know, to try to break up the two. And at first, I did not see Regal at all. And so I'm going to assume that there was a lot of people who didn't see him until he finally kind of started climbing into the ring. Boy, that's hard because, again, Regal's an Orlando guy. I would say maybe the Wardlow turn. So,
but obviously it was close.
It was close for sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, but that's all I had.
Yeah.
I don't mean to keep you until 4 a.m. But thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate the live perspective, Lindsay. Thanks so much for calling in.
All right, take care.
Take care. All right, so we got one email question, then we'll sign off for the night. And this is from James. He says, Greg, I'm typically a Hangman fan for the most part, but the main event tonight really bugged me. There were way too many big spots that were getting kicked out of. The ref looked like a dope during the hand-tied spot. I was even annoyed by how it began with Paige doing a tie-up instead of throwing punches. He was just duct-taped to the rope by this guy a few days ago. It was a good match with poor execution. It was like a singles Young Bucks match. I know the counterpoint to this is that's what wrestling is these days. That's an excuse to me. Look at Punk and MJF. They told a clear, slow-build story that built to the end. They're also match of the night for that reason. James in Clemson. James, thanks for emailing us in. I don't agree. I agree with the broader point about, you know, wrestling and the kicking out of finishers and stuff like that. I think if you save it for the right occasions, it can work. And look, people aren't kicking out of the Buckshot Lariat every week. So I think if you do it on the major matches on pay-per-view, and AEW only has 4 of them a year, I think it's okay. I also think that the selling in between moves helped, that it wasn't just kicking out of big moves without that selling in between moves. I thought they did a nice job for the most part of selling and showing that those moves caused damage and affected them later on in the match. So what I really liked is everything was crisp. You know, everything looked like it hit right on where it was supposed to. And so that's, I think too often we kind of overlook that. And so the crispness of the match is really one of the things that won me over for this one. And just, you know, I like Adam Page, and I'm rooting for him to do well as champion. It has not always been easy, and it may not be easy in the future. I like Adam Cole. I've liked him since his time really rising the ranks in NXT, and I thought he really broke out as a leader as part of Undisputed Era, as a top guy there. And I was excited to see him come over to AEW and see what he could do as one of the top stars of a major brand. And so, you know, I was pumped for this match, and I think it was a really good match and a really good capper to this really good pay-per-view. But I do acknowledge that, you know, as we've discussed throughout this show, that there were some potential warts that people could see in that match. You know, whatever excuse you want to use as to why Paige was being booed at the end, I think it's somewhat concerning and something to keep an eye on as we continue to move forward. You know, Fort Myers is the next stop, and I think that's far enough south of Tampa and Orlando and Adam Cole's stomping grounds to where, if in fact that was the reason that fans were booing Paige by the end, that should not be a factor come Dynamite on Wednesday. So if there is still booing on Wednesday, then that's going to be a larger problem that AEW is going to have to deal with. But, you know, clearly based on our phone calls and based on the emails here tonight, you know, Adam Page is not out of the woods in terms of being a champion that is in the clear and has a easy path to great storylines and no problems and no roadblocks for him as a character to get over with the audience. And I think that's kind of an appropriate note to end on here tonight, with it being the main event of this show. So just want to express my appreciation for people calling in tonight. Had a lot of calls. You know, it's great to stay up late and have this kind of interaction. It's not so fun to stay up late and only field one or two phone calls and not many emails. So I do appreciate people sticking with us here, and I know it's late on the East Coast. I'll be feeling it in the morning, trust me. And if you're listening to this on demand, thank you. You know, send those emails in. A call in next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, where we're talking about the big shows in pro wrestling. I'll have a co-host from the PW Torch family to walk us through probably the road to WrestleMania at that point, talking about Raw and SmackDown TV as we get closer to WrestleMania. That'll be the next signpost up ahead for us. So, again, follow me on Twitter, at Greg M. Parks. You can find my column if you're a subscriber to the Torch newsletter each week in the page 10 of the Torch newsletter. So if you're not a subscriber, pwtorch.com/goVIP to get signed up. No better time to go VIP than heading into WrestleMania season and the fallout from Revolution and the crazy stuff going on with Cody Rhodes. Will he or won't he with WWE? It's up in the air right now, it seems. So no better time to join the Torch family. So again, until next week, I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Park signing off. Until next Sunday, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.